Welcome, everyone. I'm Karen Shapiro, a Vice President of Partners for Progressive Israel. I'm thrilled you are all with us for the Sheikh Jarrah and so on evictions and update briefing from Meretz MK Gabi Lasky. Before I introduce Gabi and our moderator, Gilly Getz, let me note Partners for Progressive Israel is an American not-for-profit organization dedicated to the achievement of a durable and just peace between Israel and its neighbors. We believe in the need to ensure civil rights, equality, and social justice for all of Israel's inhabitants. Partners seeks to deepen Americans' understanding of Israel's complexities so that we can better advocate for a progressive future. Partners is particularly excited to be hosting this briefing today during our Stop the Evictions campaign. And we invite everyone to visit the Stop Evictions page on our website for more information. Our website is progressiveisrael.org. While you are there, please contribute to our Stop Evictions matching grant campaign challenge, where every donation is matched dollar for dollar. It gives me great pleasure to introduce member of Knesset Gabi Lasky, where she serves on behalf of the Meretz Party. She is a member of the Knesset's Constitution, Law, and Justice Committee and its Committee on the Status of Women and Gender Equality. Prior to entering the Knesset, Lasky served on the Tel Aviv City Council for 5 years, representing Meretz. She chaired the city's Commission for the Advancement of the Status of Women and Gender Equality and was an advisor to the mayor on sustainability and urbanism. Lasky is a human rights activist and expert. For years, she has practiced as a human rights attorney, focusing on the defense of freedom and expression and protest, in addition to cases involving torture, false imprisonment, and police brutality within both Israel and the occupied territories. Lasky's law firm has represented high-profile defendants, including various human rights NGOs, as well as the protesters against the occupation, against police violence, and for social justice. Now, Gilly. Gilly is an addition to being the Vice President of Partners for Progressive Israel. Gilly Getz is an Israel-American photojournalist, actor, and activist. He served as a photographer for the Israeli military. His work in recent years has been focusing on Jewish American politics and is published regularly in Jewish and Israeli press. He specializes in portraits, Jewish weddings, and photography for business marketing. His work is published by Princeton University Press in the new book, Trouble in the Tribe, The American Jewish Conflict Over Israel by Professor Dove Waxman. His one-man play, The Forbidden Conversation, explores the challenges of having a conversation about Israel in the American Jewish community. The play premiered at the Center for Jewish History in the spring of 2016, and he has been touring the country since. I want to add that Gilly visited Sheikh Jarrah and so on this past summer and gave Partners a photo essay that we published last week as a part of our campaign, which you can find on our website. I want to welcome both Gabi and Gilly for this conversation and that I look forward to listening to. Thank you, Gilly, it's all yours.
Thank you so much, Karen. And thank you so much, MK Gabi Lasky, for taking the time and being with us today. It is very exciting to have you. We appreciate your incredible insight into this. When we announced that the conversation with you, the question we most commonly got from people is about, maybe we can start with that, the kind of the tension of Meretz sitting in the government between, on the one hand, passing an incredible budget that includes enormous investment in the Palestinian, Arab Palestinian communities in Israel, money for transportation and health. And on the other hand, the agreement that the status quo in the occupied territories will stay. And we see day by day that it's not, the escalation on attacks on human rights, settler violence, announcement of more construction of new settlements. Can you talk a little bit about that tension? Where is it now, and what we have to look forward to, and kind of give us a sense of where things are now?
Well, thank you. Thank you, Karen. Thank you, Gili, for having me here. Thank you, everyone. First, the truth is that Israel was hijacked, or Israeli democracy was hijacked by a person that was prime minister, that instead of taking care of all the problems in Israeli society, was doing everything possible in order to try to escape his trial. And so many things weren't done. And on the other hand, areas like the judicial system or the police or everything were all the time being bashed by the government. So in that sense, we can say that we were able to create this, like, this miracle government that people from the right, from the center, and from the left wing are sitting together, and which we do not agree in many things. I will talk about that in a second, but we do agree on a lot of internal affairs, internal issues that have to be dealt with within the Israeli society. And what we can see in the last 4 months since the government was started, we can see that people, the ministers and the MKs, are here to work for the better of the Israeli population. So as you said, we were able to pass a budget after 3 years that Israel was working without a budget, which is really crazy in the democratic world. And we passed a lot of funds for the first time for our communities, for health. For the first time, we're dealing properly with issues regarding the ecology and sustainability and things like that, which were not treated before. And for the first time ever, there is an Arab party in the government, which for the first time gives legitimization to the Arab population of Israel, that they're equal citizens and with equal rights, and that they can be part of the government. So those things are very, very important. And we still have a lot of work to do. On the other hand, this government, since there are many differences between the parties, has decided one important rule, which is in that all the laws that are going to be passed have to have consensus from all the parties in it. And we're 8 different parties making this coalition. And because of that, this government is not going to pass annexation laws, but on the other hand, we're not going to end the occupation. So even after agreeing that, our task in Meretz is to look into the fact that the right wing of this government are all the time trying to pass decisions like more housing units in the occupied territories, and things like that, that eventually cannot allow us to create a two-state solution in the future. So our task in that sense is to stop those decisions from in the government. Besides the fact that there is settler violence against Palestinians, which is really getting very, very, very bad. And we have criticized the Minister of Defense because we have seen, probably you have seen it as well, that in many occasions where this the settlers' violence, the army stands besides the settlers and does not disperse the settlers. They don't arrest them. They don't stop them. And actually, they start shooting tear gas or hand grenades at the Palestinians who are the ones being attacked. So we have a lot of criticism regarding that. But we were able to make to have a hearing in the Security and Defense Committee in the Knesset regarding settlers violence. And for the first time in, I don't know, ever, I think, we were able to invite all the delegates from the human rights organizations in Israel, Breaking the Silence, and other organizations, which actually took part in a hearing in the committee, things that never happened before. But I can't tell you that it's easy. There are a lot of conflicts. We are the human rights party, and we have had a lot of questions of how to deal with our presence in this government. I have to say that the decision to make the six human rights organizations, Palestinian human rights organizations, to declare them as terrorist organizations has been a very, very difficult. We're tackling that decision. I worked very closely with three of those organizations, mostly the legal ones, El-Haq, DCI Palestine, and Adamir. I work with them in the military courts. They're renowned internationally, and it's very so we're all the time pushing to change those decisions and to stop bringing more housing units in the occupied territories. But we also have to think up all the time about the alternative. If Meretz wouldn't have joined this government, then the alternative would have been a government of Likud, ultra-Orthodox parties, and the Kahanistic Messianic parties together. That would be the government. So if we look at the alternative of what could have happened in the case that Meretz wouldn't have joined this government, then I think that we can agree that it would be the most right-wing government ever, the most religious ultra-Orthodox government ever, and the first government that would have members of the as Yair Lapid said, the sentence of Kahana in inside government. So we're convinced that for the meantime we're doing the right thing in the government, but we have a lot of conflicts, and we're trying to change the root of the government. Also, socially speaking, the budget is more has an intake to social issues more than it did before, because our partners are more capitalist or right wing also regarding economical issues. So Meretz and the Labour Party, we have been able to bring issues of social interest into the budget. So that is also a way for us to know that we are able to change Israel's reality regarding its citizens, issues of equality and health issues and social justice and things that Gili said before.
Thank you so much. And please, some of you already did post questions. Keep posting the questions on the Q&A button, not on the chat function. And we'll get to them very shortly. So let's get to the issue of forced evictions of Palestinians from their homes in East Jerusalem. Court cases have been going for a very long time based on a fairly unjust system where only Jews get to claim property they had before 1948 and Palestinians can't. Can you maybe give us a sense, before we get to the court cases of Sheikh Jarrah and Silwan and how they playing out, what is the strategy of the settler-led movement in East Jerusalem? Obviously, it's not about one house and one family. There's a larger strategy of creating an enclave or some sort of a territory continuous of Jewish settler presence in East Jerusalem. What is your sense of the kind of the larger effort to evict Palestinian families from these neighborhoods that's obviously been going on for a long time?
Okay, I will tell you, I will give a little background on the issue. The old city and the adjacent Palestinian neighborhoods around it is known as the Old City Basin. And I can say that maybe this area is the most politically sensitive area, of course, in Israel, but maybe even I dare to say around the world, because of its religious and historical sites, mostly the Temple Mount or Aram al-Sharif. So in this area, what is called the Old City Basin, there after more than 50 years of Israeli control over East Jerusalem, around 100,000 Palestinians living in this area, alongside 6,000 Jews, 3,000 of them living in the old city in the Jewish quarter. And the other 3,000, they're in like some settler enclaves in this neighborhoods around the old city. So we can understand that there is a very high political meaning to who is sitting in these places. And that is the real reason that there is an escalated movement of the settler organizations in order to try to evacuate Palestinians from the different areas in the old city basin in order to take their places and have Israeli control over the old city basin, with the aim of if we arrive to the time that there's going to be a political resolution between our Israeli and our neighbors and Palestinians, Israelis will have gained control over the whole area of the Jerusalem old city basin. So that's the whole idea why things are happening. So given the strategic location of the old city and the neighbors, there are two specific neighbors which are very important for the settlers. One of them is Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood, which is in the north of the old city. And the other one is Silwan, which is in the south of the old city. And these two neighborhoods are the ones that are under greatest pressure from the ideological settlers groups. And we're talking about 150 families, Palestinian families, numbering more than 1,000 individuals that live in this area, in these two areas. And these are under the biggest threat of mass displacement as a result of eviction claims filed by the settlers. And so this is what we have. And you said there are a lot of court rulings and eviction demands against the Palestinians in these two areas mainly. And I can say that since the beginning of 2020, there has been a record number of court decisions upholding eviction claims against Palestinian families in favor of settler groups. Over the past year, the Israeli courts authorized the eviction of some 40 Palestinian families, totaling more than 150 individuals from their homes in Sheikh Jarrah and in the Silwan neighborhoods. While there's still, well, still families are in court in appealing procedures, many of them have exhausted or their legal remedies and will have to be evacuated without any kind of compensation or alternative housing or anything like that. But before we get into more details about the court cases, we have to put it bluntly. In the one hand, we can say this is a legal matter because, you know, all the evacuations are individual, the demands are individual for a specific family, for a specific house, and they go to court and they have, you know, the possibility to appeal the decisions. So we can say that it's a legal matter. But on the other hand, we can say, you know, it has to be said that it's more than a legal matter, is a political matter, okay? Because of what I said before that, and because there is a possibility that either the state can say, okay, we stop all evacuations, or we try to settle this case outside of the courts. And try to find another kind of solution. But since Israel is trying to consolidate Israel's control over these areas, I think that the fact that they are forcibly uprooting entire Palestinian communities from their homes, it is also some kind of political decision, although it is not the policy of the government, but, you know, of settler groups that are doing the job for the government, I should say. And Gili, you mentioned that the laws are discriminatory. I want to explain a little bit about the laws that enable the settler groups to evacuate Palestinian families from their homes. So there are two laws. One of them is the Legal and Administrative Matters Law of 1970. This law created a discriminatory legal mechanism in order to allow to seize Palestinian property after 67 war. And it affords Jews the right to reclaim assets in East Jerusalem, now inhabited by Palestinians via the general custodian of Israel. And the fact is that not only the legal owner of the home before 48, you know, has the right with this law to get his property back, but there have been created some kinds of how do you say it in English?
What's it in Hebrew?
Some kind of ekdesh, ekdeshim. It's like an Ottoman NGO before that. You know that they have that you can say that your property goes to in order to feed the poor or things like that. So this kind of Ottoman organizations took over these housing units, and now they are the ones reclaiming the right of the Jews that lived that it was their property before 48. So we have this law that, you know, that Jews can reclaim property in East Jerusalem. But on the other hand, we have the 1950 absentee property law in Israel that enshrines that Palestinians who were forced to abandon their homes in Israel due to the war in 1948, they cannot reclaim their property back. Okay, so if we look into Jerusalem, okay, Palestinians that in 48 were forced out of their homes, according to this 1950 law, they cannot reclaim their property back. And on the other hand, in the 1970 law, Jews can reclaim their property in East Jerusalem, although they were the so we have this really discriminatory legal system regarding that, and this is the reality for most Palestinians. Some of the Palestinians living in Sheikh Jarrah were displaced from their homes in West Jerusalem. They were refugees in Jordan. Jordan settled them in the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood. And now they want the settlers are displacing them once again, according, because they were probably, some of them were Jewish homes and things like that. And they will be evacuated once again or displaced once again when they cannot get back their property in West Jerusalem. So this is the legal situation that these families are looking into. And that's like the legal framework. Another thing that's important to say is that the general custodian of Israel, although he's supposed to work by law, there is no list of properties that he manages. There is no list of ownerships, supposedly, that, you know, of past ownerships. So like someone can say, okay, I have papers that these housing units were mine before 48, but it's not written. He doesn't have it. He doesn't have anything of the sort. And actually, with what kinds of rules he works, that also is not exactly known how he's working. And there has been several petitions against the custodian in order to present all of these facts. I'm actually presenting to the Knesset a petition of information to get information regarding all of the things. Let's see if as an MK I will get more information that I would as if I would have presented it as a lawyer. So that will be one of the things that I have to see. So this is the framework of what we're dealing with, and now we can talk a little bit about the situation in the ground, and about who are those organizations or the settler organizations that are working very hard in order to evacuate the families in Sheikh Jarrah and Silwan neighborhood.
And if I can specifically ask you, if we increase resolution about the case, about the responsibility of the court and how political these decisions are, Sheikh Jarrah, just a reminder, the conflict over these families was contributing to the Gaza, to the war with Gaza that erupted, and how sensitive these evictions can be, and how the Palestinian community in the world pays attention to them. So the court has reached the court has suggested that they accept the compromise where if I get this right, the Palestinians will be protected residents, but the homes ownership will go to the settler organization. The Palestinian in recent week, the Palestinian residents have rejected that so-called compromise. So the court will have to decide in some timeline about the future of these. What do you see the court's choices, and how would they go about them? In terms of these four families? I know it's a lot of speculation, but.
Yeah, that would be. Okay, let's see what the court decisions have been until now. And then, you know, we can try to speculate. In Sheikh Jarrah, regarding Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood, since January 2020, the courts have ruled to evict 13 families from one of the sections of Sheikh Jarrah, Kerem al-Juni. And recently the district court dismissed the petitions of the of the families in two separate hearings, ordering the eviction of four families, okay? And then they decided to evict three more families. And they all presented this appeal to the Supreme Court. And the general attorney actually declined the family's request to intervene in those cases, which is first in the first, if the families turned to the general attorney and he declined to intervene, then if it was an issue of a legal substance, then the general attorney has to have to take sides, whether he thinks that they are the ones that should stay there or take the housing to the settlers organizations. And he decided not to intervene. And this is also shows us in some sense that it's more of a political nature than a legal one. And besides that, a total of approximately 30 families from this area and another 40 families approximately from the adjacent area of Kharum, also in Sheikh Jarrah, numbering around 300 people, are at risk of large-scale dispositions as a result of eviction lawsuits. I have to say, maybe you know this a little bit more while being in the States, the eviction demands in Kerem al-Juni, in Sheikh Jarrah, are being filed by Nachalat Shimon. Nachalat Shimon is a U.S. registered company working on behalf of the settlers to establish a major settler enclave in this area. So so look how it goes, you know? A U.S.-based company is evicting people that have been living 53 years in their homes, and the general attorney is not intervening. So, you know, it is not a question only of a legal matter. But we can say that the settler group already acquired the land for two Jewish associations who claim to have purchased the properties in the 19th century. Okay, so we're talking about people, you know, I don't know how the laws in the United States, but people have been, they were put there by the Jordanians, many of them. They have been living there for 53 years. And now the Jews are trying to reclaim those housing units that were purchased very long time ago. But at the same time, again, those Palestinians cannot reclaim their family homes that they can show you where they are and how they are. As a part of the Jordanian Housing Ministry refugee rehabilitation project, new homes were built by UNRWA in the 1950s for 30 families in exchange for relinquishing their refugee status, meaning that the people living there, not only they're not only going to be evacuated, but they actually gave up refugee status in order to have a stable new home after they left their homes in West Jerusalem. So regarding your question, as you said, the Palestinians rejected the court's offer, and now we have to see how the court is going to rule in the end. So it is only speculation. I don't think anybody knows what the decision is going to be, but it will affect a lot of the other evacuations on demand, and other cases that are being heard in the lower courts. But it is important to say that the Palestinians rejected this offer because it said, okay, only the people living now, okay, can continue living there. But in the end, it is the ownership will go to the settler organizations, and the Palestinians will have to pay rent to these settler organizations, and then they will have to they won't be able to inherit it, and third generation or fourth generation will not be able to live there, and at the same time, nobody is telling them that they will have, their families will have any kind of other housing units anywhere else. And we have to go back to the first part of our conversation regarding these two neighborhoods, that, you know, there is the strategy of having a continuous Jewish colonies or enclaves around the Old City Basin in order not in any future reconciliation or peace plan or whatever, that it will all stay in Israeli hands, because it is only Jews or mostly Jews are living in that area.
In the case, I understand the test case in Silwan, that is also to be decided, can affect the fate of hundreds of families, I understand, if the settlers succeed in removing this one family. Are these the same kind of legal dynamics at play in Silwan as well?
In Silwan, since the early 2020s, Israeli courts have ruled in favor of the eviction of 24 Palestinian families from Batan al-Hawa in lawsuits leveled against them by the Ateret Kohanim settler organization, which is a different organization of settlers. And this organization has filed dozens of eviction demands through the appointment of two of its members by the state as trustees in the Ben Venishti Trust. Okay, this is a Jewish trust which once held title to properties in the area in the late 19th and early 20th century. And today, 14 families have already been evicted, with over 80 other households facing eviction claims by the Ateret Kohanim, based on the mentioned 1970 law that allows them to evict families from homes that were held before by Jewish owners, and this has the consequence of this is like placing more than 700 individuals of one community at risk of a wide scale displacement, and the case of the 8 families, numbering 45 individuals, are currently pending in the Supreme Court. It's the cases of the Dweck, Ode, and Shveki families. And again, the Israeli courts have consistently authorized these evictions, despite the fact that the affected Palestinian families have been living there again for more than 53 years in homes they built on land which was legally purchased between 1949 and 1967. And due to the legislation, 1970 legislation, the courts do not recognize these transactions and view the properties as if they still belong to the Jewish trust, the Ben Venishti Trust, which built homes in Batan al-Hawa in the 19th century and no longer exists. These homes do not exist anymore. So this is also it's a little bit distinct because the two neighborhoods have some differences and a lot of similarities. And so this is what's happening now. And we also have to note that the settler groups have created these holy tourism areas in the basin, in this old city basin, giving them a lot of territory that is under their hands, although there's no housing units there. But by creating this archaeological park and things like that, then they have gained control over more area in the old city basin that they manage, and that they don't allow Palestinians to build housing units in those areas. So really making this trying to make this a sterile Jewish area around the old city, whether in the north and in the south.
What was striking going through Silwan is seeing some of those playgrounds that only Jewish kids can go to, funded by families from America, which is quite striking. So I'm going to go to some questions we have here. This is a difficult one. In terms of settlement construction and expansion, how do we recognize that line where, you know, two-state solution is no longer possible, or some line? Is it E1 construction? Is it what should we be looking for when we know we've passed some sort of a line? I know it's okay.
Definitely E1 construction. And now the Netanyahu government that at the end of its tenure passed the decision to build two neighborhoods in E1. And definitely building in E1 is very dangerous for the possibility to have a viable Palestinian state, because E1 will cross the occupied territories and break it in half, when there will not be connection between both sides of the Palestinian state. So E1 definitely is one of the very bad turns. I can say that I was present at one of the hearings in the military committee that accepts or land building in the West Bank, and the organizations that presented the appeals, because the Palestinians were not able to get there, they decided not to take part in the hearing, which is, you know, really a farce. But I think that although there was this discussion in the committee, I think that this government ultimately will not allow the building of these two neighborhoods. What else is important to see? The housing units in the occupied territories, we have to see, they are talking, or the government, or the minister of building, that he's the one that's trying to pass more and more housing units. We have to look into them. He's talking about natural growth, okay? But if he's planning 400 housing units in Al Bracha, where the total population there is 3,000 people or something like that, or even less. I'm sorry, is less than that. Then you're not talking about one second. I have to see that number again. I'll give you the number. I'm sorry.
It's not a natural growth type of.
Yeah, type it's of, not a natural growth. And again, if we look like into the Geneva peace plan, we can say if the housing units are in settlements that are deep in the West Bank, and not like in the neighborhoods that by the that Gama. Yeah, I was correct. About 3,000 people living in Al-Waha. So if we look into where those housing units are being built or will be built, if they're going to be deep in the occupied territories, or they're going to be neighborhoods that maybe are going to be in the Gushim. How do you say that? The Gushim? in the blocks that are going to be, according to the maps, are going to be maybe part of Israel if we reach an agreement of the swap land exchange one by one. So then we have to look into that, where those housing units are going to be built. So that's also an important thing that we have to take into consideration. And an important thing for us, also for Meretz, there is a lot of all settlements are illegal, okay, in our eyes and according to international law. But in Israel, we have this difference that, you know, there are these legal outposts that even according to the government, even they are not legal. And the centers are going full on creating new illegal outposts, mostly in sea areas, in order to try to kick the Palestinians living in sea areas out of this area. And they are the ones that mostly are very, very violent against the Palestinians. And so the settlers are you know, Orwellianly speaking, they're trying to change their name to young settlements instead of, you know, illegal outposts. Now they are the young settlements, in order to create a narrative that these are the new Zionists, that they're coming to the Wild West, and they are, you know, and they're creating new communities and bringing Zionism to the West Bank. So they're trying to change the narrative, and they're trying to, how would you say, greenwash them, pinkwash them, how do we say, to legal wash them, you know, they're trying to legalize them in the government. So this is also one of the breaking points. If all this illegal outposts should by any government be recognized as legal, then that would also be a problem, a very big problem for the continuity of a viable Palestinian state.
Thank you so much. The next question we have is, would this government will be able to do anything about the nation state law? Is that at all on the table in any capacity?
Well, it's not a secret that Meretz voted against this law, and I sit in the Constitution Committee, legal, and we have began hearings regarding the possibility of creating a equal to put the equality inside the law, or creating another basic law of equality. And in these hearings, through all the articles and legal books that I've read, it is clear that there is no democracy, or not even any other democracy, that in their constitution they do not mention minorities inside their basic national law. Even in, you know, in the different ex-Yugoslavia countries, Serbia, Croatia, they would say in their constitution, the Serbian Republic is of the Serbs, and all the other minorities, mentioning even Jews, gypsies, Jews, and whatever. And this is like the only constitution that says that the state is, you know, is for the Jews, and they don't mention the minorities, or specifically the big Arab Palestinian minority living in Israel. So the accords in this government is that we will not pass any law that not all the parties agreeing to. We will not be able to annul this law, but we're trying to work on the fact that we're trying to bring an equality basic law in that. I cannot promise that we will be able to do that, but we're working on it. One of the ex-Supreme Judges, Eliakim Rubinstein, who is a religious judge, he said that he agrees that equality has to be put inside the law. And so maybe if we start hearing voices from other religious or right-wing liberals like Benny Begin, things like that, maybe we will be able actually to lessen a little bit the discriminatory sides of this law.
That's wonderful to hear. Another question that comes up a lot, you mentioned the American-based settler-led organizations, and the question is, what should Jews who live in the diaspora do against these evictions in Sheikh Jarrah, in Silwan? What are pressure points, or what is a good strategy for diaspora Jews in these particular cases that are so internationally viewed? What should we do, basically? How can we help?
First, let me see what we have to do here, you know. But first of all, join the campaign of Partners for Progressive Peace, definitely. And secondly, since this question has an international edge over it, I think that also, and actually even the US government has already spoken regarding Sheikh Jarrah, I think it's important to allow the government to know that there are Israeli MKs and parties that believe that the evictions have to be stopped, and that it's not, you know, it's not an anti-Semitic claim, or it's not that we don't love Israel and we don't and that we don't believe that Jews have a right to live in Israel. It's not anything like that, and no one should turn it to be like that. But it's a question of justice and decency, and the possibility that we can create a space, a joint space where Israelis and Palestinians can live together, and as part also of a larger agreement between Israel and Palestine.
Thank you. The next question is, we have only a time for a few more, is Marsha asks, what's the current integrity of the Israeli Supreme Court? Is it like what's going on in the USA? Is the court integral? I mean, I know some decisions do allow for occupation and some part of annexation, but how should we view the courts and the court's decisions on these matters?
Well, the courts now really are trying not to get caught in the political questions. So if they have, in a sense that, as I said, there is legislation, but the legislation is very discriminatory. So if you give a ruling based on discriminatory rules, then your decision will be discriminatory in a sense, but that will be the legal decision. So the courts here are if they go strictly by the book, then their decisions are problematic. And secondly, there is also a very big problem of evidence, presenting evidence, or how the evidence presented by the settler groups or the settler organizations, how is it brought to court? Sometimes if there is a legal decision from the general custodian. If the general custodian has given a decision that, that this belongs to the Jews, things like that, then it's much harder for the courts to overrule that decision, because if there's also legal binding decisions. Once we have a decision from the Supreme Court regarding regarding Sheikh Jarrah or Silwan, then it will be very difficult for the lower courts to change their decision. So we're now in a very critical moment regarding what will the Supreme Court say about these four families in Sheikh Jarrah, to see how they take it. But I think that, you know, that the courts, although the courts are now asking a little bit more questions, and that is important for the campaign to raise those questions and to allow the broader point of view of what's happening in those neighborhoods, and then that it's not the problem of only one family that, you know, that now is fighting their court case, but it's a wider problem that presents that has many ramifications that should be dealt with, and not only with a legal decision regarding one family or the other, but that it's a bigger scale decision, and maybe it's important to have some international law decisions. I think that the lawyers have been in contact with international organizations, but it's important to even try to stop the courts from giving those decisions, because as we said in the beginning, it's more of a political nature than of a legal one.
Thank you so much. The last question will have to do with the increase in violence we see, another effort to dispossess and remove Palestinians in the South Hebron Hills, and specifically. Today, actually, two members of the congressional delegation that's in Israel right now went to Susia in the South Hebron Hills. And the questions are around what is, I know you and members of Meretz were chasing guns to have some accountability, but we watch these videos of explicit settler violence evoking very difficult memories of Jewish memory, throwing rocks and destroying property in trees of Palestinians and risking lives and injuries. In the military standing by, just looking at it and not acting in any way. Just if you can give us a little bit about what does this behavior come from, where the security services just stand by in broad daylight day after day, and what Gantz is planning to do about it when confronted.
First of all, we have to understand that as I mentioned before, I think it's part of a strategy of the settlers in area C. They are using violence in order to kick Palestinians in those poor communities in the south, the Hebron Hills, and in other communities, in order to make them go out from area C, in order for the settlers to seize the land and take over. And now what's happening is, since the military are allowing them to do that, and actually with their quiet presence, they're giving them like some kind of quiet permission to go more violently against the Palestinians in those areas. First, it is important to know that the soldiers have the legal tools in order to disperse them, to stop them, and they can do it the same as they can do with a Palestinian, they can do with an Israeli in the West Bank. So it's not a question of, you know, we don't have the legal tools to stop them or whatever. They do have them. They just decide to use them in one side. The rules of engagement actually are the same. It's not that they should be using different rules against one side of the other. And if we turn to the Geneva Conventions, Article 27 of the Fourth Geneva Convention says that the occupying power has the obligation to stop any kind of violence or intended violence against the local population. So the obligation is there, the tools are there, and the only thing is that it's in the ground, it's not happening. So we have, I went to Mufakara, to the village of Mufakara in the South Hebron Hills several days after really the pogrom of the settlers in the village, and it was devastating. It was very, very difficult to see because it has the intensity of the violence there. It is really, really unbelievable. And so we have talked to Gantz, to the minister, to his vice minister, regarding the amount of violence, and we took it to the committee of the Security and Defense Committee, and yesterday in the Democracy Convention of Haaretz and Zulat and the New Israel Fund, for the first time Gantz said something that could be, that we can, you know, try to take a little bit, that he's trying to change his mind, because not Bennett, the prime minister, and not Gantz, the defense minister, have openly spoken against settler violence against Palestinians. And I think that the first thing that they have to do is that they have to speak against it. And but they haven't. And so yesterday, Gantz for the first time said that the army is going to act against violence from every side, also if it's against the military. So he cannot, you know, if he can't say the word Palestinian, settler violence against Palestinians. So he said both sides, as if the army does not stop Palestinians, you know, in if they're just walking around the settlement. So that was a little bit change in the discourse. And we have to keep on pushing him until we see that that settlers are being arrested, they're being tried, and that they will be afraid to continue with this violence. So that's what we're doing all the time. Now there is the olive harvest. Next weekend is going to be the last day of harvesting. And so we're planning to make some kind of campaign before Saturday, in order to, we always, after every weekend of violence, we complain about the violence that was last weekend. So now we're making a campaign to call on before the weekend to start to use all the tools that the army has in order to stop or any possible violence before it happens. So that we're trying to change our strategy as well, to do it before and not after. So we will see how it works.
Thank you so much. I'm sorry to all the questions I didn't get to. There's so many questions. Hopefully we'll get to some of the time. Before I throw it back to Karen, I just like to thank you, Gabi, for your leadership and for your courage and for the inspiration for all of us here about your daily fights for democracy and equality. And you keep inspiring us every single day. We really appreciate you taking the time, and hope to see you in Israel, Palestine, or you come here to visit the United States. I'm going to give it back to Karen, I think. And thank you again. Thank you for everybody who joined and all the questions we got. And we hope to keep fighting against these evictions. Join the campaign. Speak anywhere you can, especially to in the Jewish community, for members of Congress, so we can really stop the create a momentum to stop these evictions going forward. Karen, are you back? I don't know if she's not. If not, sign up.
Karen, thank you. Not, you need to close this.
Progressive Israel. Oh, great. I'll close it. So thank you very much, everybody, for joining Partners for Progressive Israel. Sign up on our mailing list, make a donation, and we'll keep fighting together for democracy in Israel and equality for all people in the land. So thank you so much, everybody. Have a great rest of the day, and good night in Israel.
Thank you, Gili. It was wonderful to be here, and I'll see you when you're here.
Yes.